It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. I had an opening thing I wanted to talk about. Do you remember what it was?
Wait, do I remember?
Yeah.
No?
I didn't think I told you. It would be really helpful if you would remember. Huh. I spent a lot of time during the week thinking about what the first thing I'm going to talk about is. And I definitely had this one. Remember I was thinking about how I'm bad at cooking? I'm not bad at cooking. I'm actually getting a lot better at cooking, but there are certain standard cooking things that I am bad at.
Okay.
The big one is simmering. Actually, it's really funny because that's what just happened right now. Trish had to run in there because I didn't do that part right. You know the thing where, like, you bring something to a boil and then you turn down the heat so it doesn't scorch, but you have to keep it to the level so that it still boils a little bit? I don't know if you've ever cooked a day in your life. Do you cook? I have no idea. I don't know anything about your cooking history.
The thing you're talking about, you have to use for lots of things, but the thing that comes to mind immediately is oatmeal. When I make oatmeal, steel cutouts, you boil it, and then you turn it down to simmer, which, like you say, if you turn it down too far, it won't simmer. But you don't want it boiling either, and it's got to do that for 20 minutes, and if you do it wrong, the oats will be all chewy.
Burns, and it sticks to the bottom.
Right.
I've had this experience with pasta. Pasta, you mostly just have to make sure it doesn't boil over. In general, unless you've crowded too much in there, it's not going to like stick and things. So I can work with that, but I'm really bad at, like, where you like simmer something so it can thicken for a while, you know?
Oh.
Terrible at that.
Yeah, oatmeal's a good example. Oatmeal's a good example.
Exactly.
Rice is a good example.
But this does bring up a question. I'm getting, do you cook a lot?
A lot? No.
I mean, are you the primary cook in your house?
I'm not.
Currently?
No, for a couple reasons. One, because Abby actually likes to cook, but she hates doing dishes. So, and I don't mind doing dishes. So that's very much how the labor divides, but also because she eats meat now. And I don't know how to cook meat things at all.
Yeah. It would be weird a little bit, I would think.
So, you know, she basically just, you know, cooks, and then I'll just, usually the meal is we eat the same thing, except she's got meat with hers and I don't.
Yeah.
But I do know how to cook. I mean, I've cooked rice and pasta and oatmeal, and, you know, I know how to cook. Yeah.
There was a time when I cooked regularly. I know there was, because I lived by myself. I had to. I certainly couldn't afford to eat out all the time. But I don't remember it real well. I definitely lost the skills because Trish liked cooking and was a much better cook than me. And so for most of our time, she would cook. And then as time went on, where we both got busier, and B, we got more money over time. We made more. We would do more ordering out, going out, things like that. And then COVID happened, and then I got laid off. And so now we had less money, and one of us had more time. And so I started cooking again, and I'm getting into it. A lot of the issue with cooking is a timing thing. If you've worked a whole day at a job, you don't want to come home and cook necessarily. But if the cooking is part of your daily job, you get to decide. Like, I can make things now that cook, like, I can do stuff that, you know, you put it in the oven for like 3 hours or whatever, because where am I going to be? You know, I can just do it. But that's fun. And I'm learning stuff and I'm picking up things, and we're doing a lot of simple stuff that I'm like, oh, I could do this variant, and that's kind of fun. Yeah, I'm still bad at simmering, and to the degree that I'm paranoid about it. So even the times when it's fine, I can screw it up, because like, you'd like keep it covered to simmer or whatever. Well, I have to open it to check, so then I mess it up and things like that. So I still work on that. And our oven's old, and so like it says, like, you know, simmer on medium low. Well, our medium low is not the medium low you think it is. So I'm like, what does that translate that into my stove? But that, the other one is getting better at dicing up things and chopping up things a little bit. I mean, it's still a mess, but I consider a lot of people suck at that. The weird one is I suck at the part where you scrape it together so then you can easily just dump it into the pot or the bowl. Yeah. I always spill it everywhere, no matter what it is, no matter the size of the cutting board or the size of the substance. It goes everywhere. It's a disaster. So those are my two biggest. I don't think this is what I wanted to talk about in the beginning, but I can't remember what I actually wanted to talk about.
Did you cook when you were a kid very often?
I mean, I did the stuff where you cook with your mom, but like that was just like, you shred the cheese, honey, and I'll do everything else, like that kind of deal. As I got older, I would make my own lunches and things. So like I learned how to make mac and cheese and ramen and soup and stuff like that, but not a ton, not a ton. The famous one is in fourth grade, they came up with an art project we were going to do for Mother's Day. And the project, I've talked about this on the podcast before. Of course, at this point, I think I've talked about everything on the podcast before. The project was every kid was going to bring in a recipe and we were going to make a cookbook. And it was a whole thing where like we made these cool covers and we bound it together with yarn and things like that. So we were making stuff too, but you brought in the recipes. And it was actually really fucked up because most of us went home and told our parents, I need to bring in a recipe, ideally a family one, but some recipe that we like. And our parents gave us one and we took it in. Some kids didn't so much have support of their parents, and so they had to wing it. And of course, we were all 9 years old and assholes, so we made fun of the kid who brought in a recipe that was for tomato soup, and it was how to make condensed Campbell's tomato soup. I want to even say that it said follow the directions on the can. There was nothing. Then there was a different one called Banana Surprise that was peel a banana into a bowl, mush it up with a fork, and pour orange juice on it. Hmm. So we made tons of fun of those kids. And now I'm just like, oh, that's because they had shitty parents who refused to help them bring in a recipe. So now I know that. But there was a recipe in there for a chocolate loaf cake. And I decided to make that. We had the cookbook and I'm like, I'm going to make this. You know, kids did this. And the person who brought it in said they made it great. So I made it. Made it and I decorated it because we had some cake decorating stuff, and we had it for, it might have been somebody's birthday cake. I don't remember. It might have been like my sister's birthday cake, or but it's chocolate loaf cake. It's fine. Right. So we started eating it. Oh, so good. Yeah. Couple of bites in. I'm not noticing it, but suddenly everybody's giving looks to each other. And my sister, I think, said, "Honey, how much salt did you put in this?" And I said, a tablespoon and a half. And they said, what? I said, a tablespoon and a half. And they were like, oh, no, that would have been a teaspoon and a half. And once they said it, I was like, holy shit, this is kind of salty chocolate cake. And, was before we did. But fun story, look it up in the book. No, it said a tablespoon and a half. I fucked it up for not knowing and just following the recipe. It was a typo, but it was clearly that. So,
well, I did plenty of cooking when I was a kid, and then I had some jobs where I was a cook. So, I mean, I guess somehow it worked out that I learned. I mean, nobody taught me. I don't remember anyone teaching me anything. And when I cooked at home, I just did what I saw mom do, or I followed, you know, directions.
Yeah.
And then when I cooked for, like, you know, as a job, it usually wasn't anything that complicated and you just did it. I don't know. So
my mother, I don't think I ever got the concept of sort of the art of cooking. There were things that were just simple that she would make and that I learned how to make.
Yeah.
That were things like boil some pasta, saute some onions and some shrimp in a pan with some butter, and then put the pasta in it and toss it together with, you know, these seasonings. And you don't have to measure shit, you know?
Right.
And then I go older, I'm like, oh, these are recipes, and I have to work at recipes. I'm working at that, and it's a pain in the ass, and I don't really like to cook because I hate following the recipes, and the recipes are always like, let it sit for 20 minutes, and then I'm like, what the hell? I'm just making dinner. And then I meet my wife, and my wife is, like, very good cook, but also she's like, yeah, at some point in your life, you should have seen the recipe. But once you get the gist of it, you just sort of feel it. And the problem is that absolutely works for her. She makes incredible stuff from things she hasn't seen the recipe in years because she just kind of knows. She's got the natural cooking instinct. So she can tell, like, oh, that's going to burn pretty soon. We should not. And, oh, this is probably, oh, maybe a little more. You know, she uses phrases like a pinch and a dollop and shit like that. It is not something I can impersonate.
Yeah, I mean, my mom and grandma were really good at that kind of thing. I mean,
so were her mom and grandma. She's got the touch.
I think most of the stuff that I've cooked is either really simple, so it's hard to mess up, or I just follow the directions exactly, and maybe it, you know, might work out. But Abby can do this too. She can just do it. Yeah. I suppose with practice, maybe that's something most people can develop.
Well, but we have found to a certain degree. I mean, there's some tricks I do is I know this simple thing and I know this simple thing. Well, what if I put them in the same pot, you know, like that kind of thing, and I can create things out of that. Yeah. And but also, so Trish, you know, at 5 years old, saw a printout of a bunch of recipes and they're just in her head forever. Now she's married to me. And she doesn't see them anymore, even remember what they are, but she can just do it. So then the first time she's like showing me how to do it. And she's like, you know, approximately this much or whatever. And she'll guess because she's not an idiot. She can also be like, I throw about this much. That's probably a tablespoon just by looking at it. So it comes sort of full circle because then she teaches me. So then I follow essentially the recipe I learned of her teaching me. I like the sort of experimental aspect, and as I learn to make more things, I play around with that. And we've had some recipes where we're like, you know, it would be good, let's try putting this in it, let's do this and stuff like this, and sometimes it works. And I've learned how to make things that are edible, so like she taught me to make a dish and I made it and it was good, and then the next time I was like, I'm gonna try this little trick, and we did it and like, oh, that's nice, we should do that in the future. And then the next time I tried a couple of tricks and you're like, you know what, this was not, I mean, it's fine, we ate it, this is not as good as the other way. So, you know, we're just honing in on it. Last time I just cut up some chunks out of the chicken and just shoved raw garlic into them before I did the whole thing, and much to my shock, it actually worked really well. I was like, this could be awful, but no, it's good. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where 1 week you're looking at a guy who's blurry on one side and a guy who's clear on the other side. And the next week, the blurry guy is so clear, makes the clear guy look blurry by comparison.
Yep.
I'm Tony.
And I'm blurry. And this is episode, William, sorry, and this is episode 509.
Oh, Blurry William. That's what we used to call him. No one could really ever see him is the problem. We knew he was there. We could hear him breathing. But nobody could ever really tell.
And the only way people knew it was me was because I was the only one that was blurry.
Exactly. Turned out, he just had the worst allergies anyone has ever suffered. We got him some Claritin D and he's been fine ever since. The nickname stuck.
Probably the only human to ever be allergic to himself.
I don't know that that's true. I went to college with somebody who was allergic to her own sweat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That would be bad.
I've also heard of men who are allergic to their own semen, which is also complicated, I would think. I had a fight with me and this friend of mine in college because I was allergic to the cold. And she's like, that's really weird. But she was allergic to her own sweat. And I'm like, that's weirder. And she's like, no, it's not. So we did an informal poll of a bunch of people. I won by 100%. Hers was definitely weirder. I was like, my body doesn't make the cold. So, for those of you just joining us, we have a hat. He has a lot of hats. We have the specific hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, you know who you are. You're listening. You're doing. You're involved. We love you. Write in that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Its webcamming servants draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the person art, which is most of it. And we are now coming to you. Well, I'm now coming to you from my new webcam, or as the package that shipped from China called it, security camera / dog sitter / baby monitor.
Oh, so we're in baby monitor mode right now then.
I think so. Also, the package that I ordered that specifically said on Amazon, it came with a tripod, and that specifically came with a tripod in the box, said in its instruction booklet, does not come with tripod. I feel like this is one of those random fly-by-night things that just happens to actually have worked out well.
Probably.
Like, I'm genuinely convinced a blind 5-year-old was forced to make this for 3 cents, and then they smuggled it out of a country somewhere. And
probably while being watched by the exact same camera.
Right, right. So here we are now, but I like it. It's a little, I don't know. I may play around with like turning that light off sometimes and stuff, because it's a little, I feel a little overexposed light wise on it, but otherwise it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But the mic on it is apparently just the same quality as the mic on the laptop, except there's a weird staticky background noise. But we're still just using the one on the mic. And I don't trust the speakers or lag thing, so I'm still using the headphones for now, even though at gaming I didn't. Yeah, one friend showed up to the gaming group early, and so we were playing with the two microphones, and it was very much, does it sound better now or now? She's like, do you play number one again? I'm like, yeah, hold on. And then she's like, I hear static. I'm like, do you still hear it? She's like, no. And I'm like, okay, maybe it was on this one. Switch. She's like, no. And then we finally figured out which one it was. She's like, yeah, I hear this buzzing in the background. So the sound quality should be identical to what it was before.
Pretty much is, yeah.
How's your week been?
Well, this, the big thing that we did this week was we helped Dave Avid playtest a game called Space Station Omega.
Yeah. I wanted to do that, but we didn't have the time for it. But yeah, I've been curious about that one. I almost played it at GammaCon. He had it at GammaCon too. It was.
We played it before. This, I don't remember how it's different. I mean, I think he has changed things in it, but I don't remember. But all we were doing at first, or what we were doing so far, is, you know, character creation.
Okay.
And I don't remember this time around. It was really, really fun and interesting. I mean, I'm sure it was the first time too. I'm sure it was the first time too, but this time was like really a lot more intense is to me for some reason.
And well, there's a lot of building the scenario each time, I think. So in theory you could, right? I mean,
right, but it's like
bare bones stuff, but you put it together. So in theory each game would be very different.
Yeah, but you know, when we were going to the Saturday thing, Abby and I were going to that. It, you know, Dave likes to play games where, you know, you're, like you said, you're creating characters in a situation sort of corporately, you know. And I've noticed he seems to really be interested in those games that have ways of getting the players to create rich characters, even if, you know, getting ordinary people to be able to create rich characters, right?
Including specific mechanics that require you to create details that make it more nuanced.
Sure. So you know, you'll have a game that you know, for you to figure out what your particular stats are, you have to answer certain questions the way your character would answer the questions, and they're big questions, like big existential questions. Or you'll have to specify somehow that you're related to two other characters in specific ways, you know. And these are ways to build, you know, richness to the character that, you know, people who are used to playing role playing games, or who are storytellers, or who write novels or whatever, might be able to do that anyway. But you know, people who aren't used to doing that might have a hard time creating that richness of character.
Well, especially within a time crunch, that's the problem. Because these games, when I played them, I'm at a gaming con, so we only have 4 hours for the whole thing, and I have to come up with it off the top of my head. And so I have trouble with that. If you tell me, here's the sheet, here's what you're going to have to do, come back in a week with your answers, much more doable.
Well, Dave might say that he didn't change anything from that from the last time, because maybe he didn't. But I just thought this time, the way it was laid out and the questions that were asked and the way you needed to think about the questions produced, you know, a lot more intuitive results, more quickly. And I just found the whole character creation process to be, you know, one of the best that I've experienced. And again, he has exposed me to lots of different game systems that have this kind of thing in it, including some of his own. But I don't remember any time I've done it. And I've always liked the character building stuff that I do at Dave's games. So it's saying something for me to say, I thought that this was especially good.
Is this a known system? Is this like based off of the Apocalypse World engine?
I do believe it's based off of something you would recognize, but I don't remember what it's called.
All right. Dave.
I hope
he's the show, longtime listener. Get on the blog and tell us what system it is. I want to say it's powered by the Apocalypse, which I still hate, so I just call it the Apocalypse engine, which is a system I'm getting very into, but it is tricky because each game handles things differently, but I really like it conceptually and I keep wanting to make use of it, but I really need a generic version of it so that I can just do it on the fly.
But then it took pretty much the whole session to sort of talk about how character creation is done and for people to create characters and things. So, you know, we ended the session with a little bit of work still to do. So that scenario you were just saying hypothetically about come back in a week with the character, we kind of have that opportunity with these characters.
That's nice.
But the character creation, you know, the way you're guided through it with the form is so good that, I mean, I've done a few things with my character and I've helped Abby with her character, but for the most part, it was all just in the time that we spent on it, it all pretty much got fleshed out. It's that the process was that good. But interesting thing about the characters that Abby and I have created, my character, I've never had a character like this before. It's essentially me, except a criminal.
Is this a take a penny, leave a penny thing again?
No. I mean, it's kind of, it's what my character is a, he's the boss of a smuggling ring, a trafficking ring, basically.
Uh-huh.
And, but I mean, you know, his name is Bill. His official occupation is a dishwasher, which I used to do that for a living.
Used to be head of a smuggling ring. So, I mean,
he's also an anarchist. So his politics kind of motivates his criminal behavior. So it's like, but weirdly, even though I can see that this character is essentially me except a criminal, and I've never done that before. In all the times I've done role-playing, I've always done a character that's, you know, I don't like do voices or anything like that, but I mean, the characters I've played are not me, they're characters, right? This is like me except a criminal, and yet I feel like this is going to be harder to do than anything I've ever done before. Like, it would be easier if it was like an alien species or something.
I believe the phrase is holding up a mirror. No, it's tricky to try and play. I have, because the deepest version of this is, and I've done this to people a few times, role-playing game that you start off with, okay, here's the system we're using. Stat up you. Like, create this character as yourself and put down. In fact, a couple times I've been like, forget what the game says about like how many points you have to spend. Just put down how many you think are accurate for everything for you. Then I usually do that. And it's not a good idea, is what I will basically say in general, because I think it ends up making, like, people think it's fine and that it's easy, but it ends up making them feel uncomfortable. Because, I mean, and we've talked about this concept, like, there are so many extreme things in the world where I genuinely don't know how I would react if I was there. And in a lot of them, I'm like, I'm just glad I never am going to be faced with that.
Well,
then in a role-playing game, you do, because it's an adventure and, you know,
right. But I mean, I don't think I'm going to, I mean, when I say it's hard.
And I don't either, because I don't think this is you dead on. There's just lot more similarity here.
Right.
You may find it gets weird because of that association. I'll put it this way. I am really excited to see how this goes for you. I think this will teach you a lot about role playing one way or another.
Well, that's kind of what I think, which is why I'm doing it anyway, because honestly, I think all the other things I've ever done role playing was kind of an easy out, you know. It was just easier for me to do something that's crazy, that's not, you know, that I'm not really putting a lot of myself into, you know what I mean? And yes. I'm not really putting a lot of myself into this either, but the character resembles me so closely, I have a feeling I'm going to have some experiences with this that I haven't had with other characters I played.
I have a theory, although it's not a theory that I've been looking at for a while, so it might be bullshit at this point, but I developed a theory a while back that not necessarily in how you make the character, but how one plays the character, everything about the character is either just like you, the person, or the exact opposite of you, the person.
That's probably true.
Because that's sort of how our brains work, I guess, is my thought. Because we either know how to do what we would do and be how we would be, or we're like, I'm going to think about that and then do the complete opposite.
Right.
This is also my theory on how people parent, but that's a different story.
Well, I would agree only insofar as to say those two things are the easiest thing. Like, the path of least resistance is the first one. And the next one is when a person on some level thinks, well, I don't want to just take the path of least resistance.
So they take
the path of second least resistance.
Or sometimes the path of most resistance.
Sure.
Go big or go home. But I developed this because over decades of playing with people and frequently playing with the same people, I noticed that a lot of us, including myself, even though we would play characters that were completely different and ran all sorts of, different genders, different backgrounds, different motivations, different moralities, different everything, they all kind of felt the same. Like, so-and-so played this character in this game and this character in this game and this character in this game. They were incredibly different. They all kind of felt like the character that so-and-so plays. Not in a way that I could really tangibly explain. So then I started thinking about it, and I'm kind of like, yeah, it's people come here, and possibly a broader and more safe thing is people frequently play role-playing games because they want to play a certain type of character. And then in every game, they manage to play that type of character. it's a big generality. As you get better at it, you can change. And I have worked very hard to change. And a lot of people in my group, they try and push themselves sometimes. I've had somebody recently that they're like, I don't play this guy. Or most of my group is like, I don't play the social characters. I'm bad at that. Which I'm like, your own social anxiety doesn't mean you can't play a character like that, but whatever. I had somebody who was like, I've never played this kind of character. And it makes me nervous, and I don't think I'm good at it. I want to stretch my role-playing muscles. So this time I'm going to play the social character, the face character. And it was really cool. And they weren't great at it to start with, but they got noticeably better as it went on. And they'll be that much better in the next game if they want to try that. So I know, I think this is cool. I think it's always cool to try and do something you haven't done before. I think this is a common thing people run into. You haven't yet. I'm going to be very curious to see how this shapes your view of role playing and stuff.
Abby wanted to play an alien character. She had some things, she had some characteristics she wanted the character to have that wouldn't really have anything to do with whether or not it was alien, but she wanted it to be alien. So, in my fiction, I've created an alien species called the Clarosians. And I said, well, why don't you make something based on them? And she said, okay, well, help me out with that because, what were all the things that you had that were about the Clarosians? Well, they're a photosynthesizing race, and that means this, that, and the other thing. And my conception, they were like extra dimensional advanced beings or whatever, but hers are not. They're sort of more grounded and down to earth. And then she kind of based them on this actual species of algae or something, like what if that species of algae eventually became a sentient and the predominant species on there. So together with, some of the ideas from this alien species that I created for my own work and some stuff that she made to sort of make it a more grounded, not extra dimensional or advanced species, just your regular species. She's come up with something that's really super interesting. I mean, really interesting. I mean, I like my concept, and I'm able to write some more stories with it. But I have to say that what she's come up with is like better as far as like would be a great character in like comic books or
group collaboration is rare and awesome. And oh yeah, pretty bad at.
What she's put together is just really, really cool to me. The name of the character is Vox Cordis, which is Latin for voice of the heart. Because the one thing that what her Clarosian and mine have in common is they don't have mouths or noses or whatever, because they don't, they don't eat, right? So they have to communicate empathically, but for my creatures, since they're extra dimensional, I mean, they're extra dimensional, so they can do this empathic thing. But hers has to, her character's empathic communication has to be like through pheromones and you know, subsonic vibrations and things like that, you know, like actual things that help Vox communicate without using words.
This is another fun thing, is playing a character who can't communicate just normally. People don't do that too often, but it can be to play like a mute character and stuff like that, and to have to find other ways can be very fun and challenging.
So it's going to be really interesting. And we both had a great time figuring these characters out. And I do credit a little bit the system that Dave's come up with, because there's something about it where it asks just the right questions and it challenges just the right.
I mean, I think that's his goal. I mean, I don't want to speak for Dave, but I'm gonna, because he doesn't have a podcast. I think that's what he's going for, is make you really think about it. He likes character-driven stuff and I don't want to say improvisation, but again, collaborative.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff, yeah. Which I have a very hard time with. I'm not a good collaborator as a whole. I'm a good leader. I'm not a good collaborator. But I think that's what he goes for, and that's admirable, and it's something that I do seek out. I'm just not as skilled at it and not willing to try hard enough.
But anyway, that's been fun, and we look forward to doing it again on Saturday, so that's cool. How was your week?
It was mostly okay, I think. I think I talked about how I was going to do this. I bought another fitness game for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yeah, you said you were going to.
Fitness Boxing 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah, boxing. That's what you said it was going to be. How is it?
Good is the short answer. It's interesting. So it's basically a rhythm game. Think about it as Dance Dance Revolution. It's your arm movements instead of your foot movements.
Oh.
But it's based on actual boxing, in theory. I mean, there's a lot. I've recently have found out, like, the game gets, I don't do certain punches the right way, and I figured out I need to do it the way they want to do it, because A, the motion controls are limited, so there's only so much it can gauge. But also, this is an exercise. It's not actually teaching me to box. So, like, I'm having trouble with the uppercut that I just recently learned, and I have finally figured out that the best angle for it with the motion controller is a way that basically looks like I'm going to punch myself in the face, which in a fight would be bad.
Yeah, bad. That's bad. Yeah.
So it works, and I'm not trying to learn fight. I'm trying to do exercise. So you've got a trainer who's always on the screen that's talking to you about stuff, and like you're sort of mirroring them while you're doing stuff. And there are 8 different trainers, and you can switch if you want. And there's, I don't know if it's 4 guys and 4 girls or 5 girls and 3 guys. I don't know. But they're all anime characters, not specific like famous ones, but they're all anime, which means they're all kind of like ridiculously good looking, which on a certain level, I feel like is not a smart move. It makes you feel insecure.
Oh.
On the other hand, as soon as I was able to change, I picked the one that her name is Laura. But I think she best would be described as busty Australian Amazon, because I'm still a pervert. And so that's what I wanted to look at while I was exercising. And there's a whole deal where you can buy different outfits for them and stuff. So I, of course, immediately bought the most revealing, tightest thing that was currently available to me, which admittedly wasn't much, but still. So I'm like, this whole idea, I feel like, is running counter to fitness, you know? But I realized it's more gamification. There's more shit you can do that makes you want to keep going, because I get tickets for like, and I can unlock new clothes and stuff. And actually, the more I play, I unlock new songs that it will play for me and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's all gamified and makes me want to do it some more. My dream was I'm going to try out all the trainers and see who I like. Cause the first trainer, that's the default. Her voice was really grating to me. So I was happy to switch. Lara's sort of an alto and the Australian accent is really sort of mellow. And I like that. I find I'm getting attached to her already. So I'm like, I could switch, but I don't know. She and I have been through a lot here. We've worked just today. Cause like, I suck at my uppercuts right now. And she's like, I think you might be pushing yourself too hard. And I'm like, you're the one who's pushing me. So what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, it's not actually interactive. It can't hear you. Stop it. Like, don't do that. I find it's good. It's also really working the muscle. Like my shoulder blades are sore in a way they have never been in my life. It's really kind of crazy. So this week I'm just doing this game to get the hang of it. I think next week I'll try and do a thing where 3 days a week is boxing and 2 days a week is Ring Fit.
Oh,
yeah. We'll see. At the moment, I seem to be enjoying this more than I remember enjoying Ring Fit, but it may just be the novelty.
Sure.
So that could wear off. We'll see. But I mean, I think it's a good workout. I'm pretty pleased. Not a lot else. I'm running the Ashen Stars role playing, and we just finished the first adventure, which was the adventure in the back of the book, which was a good way to sort of give us all experience with how the system works. But it also was really tricky because everything was sort of laid out and like you have to do this for this to happen and things like that. And so consequently, like huge background information that would have helped them out, they missed. And there were a lot of things that I'm like, well, I think you're going the right direction, but you can't unless you use it. And I realized later, I'm like, when I make my own adventures, I can play it way more fast and loose. So that'll be good. But still pretty happy about that. Good, you know, sci-fi space opera stuff. I have to keep telling them things like, think of it as a cable sci-fi show. So if what you're doing would be too boring to put on a sci-fi show, skip to the next scene. So there's bits where they're like, we have this thing we want to take out of the truck because it could be a problem. Should we take it out here? And one of the, she's trying to help me out. She's like, I think that's not a big deal. I think we should just move on to the actual mission. Da, 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 da. And I finally have to jump in and say, yes, you can take that out of the truck. And I'm like, so it's done. Now that's all it took. And I need to get better at that in general, because they'll do shit. There was one thing where I was like, it's this destroyed planet and like it rains ash all the time. The building they got to has this weird alloy that's like stays white and gleaming all the time. It was this museum and it's all white and gleaming. And one of them's like, I think, why is it that this is the only stuff on the planet that's not covered with ash and grime? And I had to be like, okay, I don't know how to do this in game. So I'm just going to say that was purely flavor. I just said that as a cool description. There's nothing to that. Don't spend time on it. And I realized later, I'm like, what I should have do is, yeah, you check it out and stuff. And you realize, no, it's just an old alloy left over from the Utopian era that does that, repels this stuff. And then we could have moved on and it would have been smooth. So I need to work on that. This is a very different type of game for all of us, and it's can be tricky sometimes, but I'm digging it. I'm excited about that. The important thing, well, two important things happened today. One, HBO Max is now available on Roku.
Really?
Yes. As of today. So I'm happy about that. And two, this afternoon, Trish and I watched a comedy special that was being live streamed across the world. It was James Acaster's most recent. He recorded it, apparently recorded it December 17th, 2019. And then they had this worldwide live stream at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, which was 2 p.m. our time. Later on, they actually put in times for different regions because it was so popular. It would have been either 8 p.m. Eastern time, which I'm like, that might have gotten in the way of the podcast setup, or 8 p.m. Pacific time. And I was like, fuck that. So we just watched that one. It's like, we're both at home, 2 o'clock, we'll watch it. And it was long. It was 2 hours with an interval in it.
Mm.
It was really good.
Mm.
It fascinated. It's, I mean, I love James A. Acaster already. And that's part of it. I feel like in some ways, this is one of the better, one of the best shows I've ever seen. But there's a lot of backstory tied into that. This show is largely about him spending 2017 dealing with severe mental illness issues.
Mm.
But it's hilarious. And it's not, it's not like Nanette, which was a great show, and no offense to Anna Gavsky, but parts of that like made me feel uncomfortable. And we've talked about like I had bad dreams. Like, no, none of that here, but it's dealing with some real stuff. And it's fascinating because James Acaster is clearly a young kid who had some, you know, like depression issues or whatever that went undiagnosed and was incredibly creative and could come up with funny shit. And so he went into comedy and really quickly made a name for himself doing these really clever random shit at the Edinburgh Festival. But now it's like he's in his 30s and he's gone through some stuff. He's discovering like what it's like to be a real stand-up. Because if you get into sort of the background of stand-up comedy, so much of it is like crippling mental illness issues that they are using performance as a catharsis for it.
Sure.
Like so many comedians talk about that kind of thing and issues with rejection and issues with wanting to be liked by everyone and things like that, needing attention and all that. And they'll talk about it. And so it's really, but it's still like it was, the material was completely different than what James Acaster did before. But it was solidly James Acaster. And it was just neat to see still 100% his voice, but it's, the craft has matured such a great way, and it was awesome to see, and it makes me really excited where he's going to go.
Hmm.
It's such a great sort of evolution of his comedy, and I really, really enjoyed it. The special, which you know you'll eventually be able to find somewhere, I'm sure, is called Cold Lasagna Hate Myself 1999. I mean, I do kind of know why, but there's the reasons it's called that are not useful. And part of it can be explained. It was named way early in its conception, and some of that title no longer applied accurately.
Okay.
It was there. So that was really cool. We watched that today, and I laughed my ass. I was one of those, like, I laughed consistently out loud, like, through the whole thing. It was really good.
Good.
And it's funny because he has a whole bit up near the top about when he was on a charity episode of the Great British Bake Off. Apparently, he had just gone through 36 hours with no sleep and the worst jet lag of his life just before they recorded it. So he tells this whole story about it. I've seen the episode, so I remember all this. And as soon as we were done, I went to YouTube and we watched like a compilation of his bits from it. And it looks so different now because it's him being like, originally it's like, yeah, it's him being funny and goofy and all this. And now it's like, no, that's him genuinely being semi-delirious and them editing it just right. And like, he talks about like lines he said on it. That was the thing, is he felt really embarrassed about it. And he's like, you know, it's not a big deal or whatever. It's Bake Off. People don't even watch the charity ones. And he's like, I'm a meme in America now. And we're laughing at that. And he's like, yeah, there's this meme. I didn't even know it was a thing. And I don't remember saying it, but apparently there's a part. It's just three panels. And it says, started cooking, had a breakdown, bon appetit. I turned to Trish and I'm like, he fucking said that. He said that exact thing. And we went back and watched. And yeah, he presented them with his dish and it was disaster. Like it hadn't cooked. It was still like soupy and stuff. And so they said, so how'd it go, James? And he tells the judges, he's like, well, started baking, had a breakdown, bon appetit. It was really funny to me to be like, that actually did happen. But yeah, it's a really impressive concert. I highly recommend it when one can get ahead of it. If you hear this early enough, so basically jazz, and maybe Dave actually, Dave sometimes listens like immediately. You probably could buy a ticket to the live stream happening at 8 p.m. Pacific time if you really want to. So jump on that. I think it cost like $13. I brought the British one, so I paid £10, which came out to like $14 plus a 14 cent international charge. But I believe the American tickets are $13. I don't know why I did pounds like this, like it's not real money. You know, pounds. What crazy shit they have over there. It's so, it's different colors. It's great. We started watching the most recent season of Doctor Who because I finally figured out it was on HBO Max. And we hadn't seen it yet. So the second Jodie Whittaker season started watching. And it's making Trish question if she still wants to watch Doctor Who. Which is funny because I'm enjoying it. Meanwhile, I'm not enjoying this season of Mandalorian very much. But I'm realizing that my feelings on them are incredibly similar. I can't tell you why, like, one I'm giving more of a pass to than the others. But this season of Mandalorian in general is way too Star Wars for me. And it's pissing me off. It's got too much, it's bringing in like canon material that I'm like, these are the parts of Star Wars that annoy me. Stop it. And it also likes to do the hand wavy bullshit where like, oh, things are terrible. And then at the end, something random happens and we're saved. And Doctor Who does that nonstop. The only thing I can think of is Doctor Who has a lot of personal melodrama, which I can sink my teeth into. And Star Wars has epic drama, which I couldn't give less of a shit about. So that may be part of it, but we'll see. I have been collecting Baby Yoda gifts. So what are you going to do for the holiday? Are we recording Christmas Eve? I mean, obviously not right now, but are we, is our schedule clear for that? I mean, I think I'm fine.
I don't think I am. I think, all right. I think we probably should try to record it before. Yeah.
All right. Well, we not that it. I'm. I can make that work. With,
not that I'm going anywhere, but I think Abby
might be doing shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wants to do.
You know what we're gonna do for Christmas?
No.
I didn't think you did. I'll tell you. We're making Detroit style pizza. So you remember I've talked about Detroit style pizza before.
Yeah, but I don't remember what Detroit style is.
It's not super important. It's the thicker crust. You don't put the sauce on it at first. You put a bunch of cheese and it melts over the edge. So there's like a ring of browned cheese around the outside. And then just before it's finished baking, you dollop some sauce on it. There was a place in Cedar Rapids we had it. It's really good. People who know it really love it. And there's this celebrity online chef whose name is Asian and Hispanic at the same time, like Kenji Alberto. So I don't know, but I'm saying this and hopefully some people know who I'm talking about. But anyway, Trish watches his stuff and he makes a lot of cool stuff, and he decided he wanted to make Detroit style pizza. So he worked to come up with the best recipe to do it. And he did. And it included specifically, you need this certain pan that this one company makes that is made to do this. And so she's telling me about this and she's like, we've already talked, like, we'll probably have a nice meal that night, but we're not going to do a whole turkey again or anything like that. And she says, like, the pan's like $30. What if that's our Christmas present to ourselves? We'll make Detroit style pizza based on this recipe for Christmas dinner. And I was like, I'm there. So the pan showed up. I washed it and seasoned it the way I'm supposed to. And yeah, so Christmas, we'll do that. That'll be tasty. Should we draw a thing? I don't know how long we've been here, but it's a while. Reaching into the hat. Feeling around for dandruff. Whoa. This is weird. Remember how we had the first ever double digested question?
Yes.
It's happened again.
Is it Beth again?
It's not Beth, which is surprising. It is Hard Hat number one, Mark McKibben.
Ooh.
See, Hearts. A lot of people would say this never happened and it's happened twice so close together. The hat must be getting lazy in its transcription. And I can see how you would think that. But I'm here to tell you on behalf of the hat, no. These people just wrote motherfucking novels and expected the hat to transcribe them on a card this side.
Mark is playing the game with us, and also his wife, who goes by the moniker Darth Delicious. She's playing too.
I knew that. How did I not notice you were on that email? Because I was on that email. Because I said we might be interested. I'll get back to you. And before I could get back to you, he started things. And so there was the email, and I saw that Mark and his wife were on there. And then Trish and I talked about it, and we're like, we just can't make this happen. And so then I got off, but I didn't notice you were on there. I would have thought I would have noticed that.
Yep.
All right. Well, player of William's game and far too much writer for part. Okay, that didn't work. Mark McKibben says, all right, and I need to specify again, this was abridged. And then the hat took that abridged version as though it had never seen the original and made a summary of that. So this bears little to no resemblance to the original question. William always says my wife instead of his wife's name. What's that about?
I just didn't.
That's ironic, because this episode you actually said Abby instead of your wife.
That's because she showed up on our...
Yeah. Okay, sorry. You answer this, because I think I'm curious as well. I have some theories, but...
Well, I just never... It just is a matter of course, you know, I'm not going to say a person's name if I don't have permission. I mean, because it's going out to the world on the internet or whatever. I don't think she would have cared or anything. It's just, I think I did even say her name once, kind of accidentally or whatever. But
I think I've said it a couple times.
Yeah. And it's not a big deal, but it's just a kind of a matter of habit. Well, just now when I didn't say Mark's wife's name, I'm sure she wouldn't care, but I just didn't. Just
I almost did, but I didn't want to undercut what you had done.
So it's just a thing. I mean, but, you know, after she kind of showed up on the 500th episode, I mean, that's now, you know, she let the cat out of the bag. So that means I can say her name now without any problem. So I do.
And this is, and I get this. I get this about you. I've known you for a while now. And I understand it. And it, like, it's not something I adhere to a degree, but it's like, I don't have enough of a problem with it that I would attempt to do the opposite. Like, I'm like, okay, that's fine. It did present a problem back before you were calling her your wife. If we wanted to talk about things on the podcast.
Yeah, that was the thing. Serves,
we that sort was... of couldn't talk about her.
Well, I would say the other adult in the house or things like that.
Yeah. It got tricky. I will say, and this is a tangent, for me, sometimes I say my wife because... It's cool to say that. I like saying that. Like, there's something about the nature. This is my wife. I like my wife. I have a wife. And that's, famously, on the day of my marriage, right after we were done, I was like, my wife. Hey, have you met my wife? I have a wife. And I still enjoy that sometimes. I like the indication of the nature of the relationship that way. But in your case, you are very private about these things. And I understand that. It's also super weird. To the degree that you and I became friends, I knew you, I was friends with you for probably a good year or more. And again, not because you said this, but because of how much you omitted, mm-hmm. I was genuinely under the impression that you and she lived in the same house but were platonic friends.
Well, I mean, there was a long time where the relationship was. See, I don't know if I would have used those particular words to describe it, but.
And as I said, you didn't.
No, but there also weren't other words to describe. I mean, you know, I had my own room, my own whatever.
Yeah. Well, you kind of still do.
We were like dating other people and stuff. I mean, it was like we weren't.
Yeah, but it eventually did come up. I forget why it came up, and it just shocked me. And then I thought back, and I'm like, he never said just the way he talked, because again, you would never. You're the only person in the world who, without an external extra reason, would be dating someone on the regular, living with them, and just never bring up that aspect of the relationship. Oh.
Well, that's true too. That's true too. I mean, I've gotten in trouble on that with lots of things. Like, there was one time when I was in college and I was working in the cafeteria, and there was this woman working there, and she and I got along great. You know, we were always kidding around and stuff. But I mean, I think I was even married at the time, and I didn't talk about being married. I didn't talk about my wife. And to my knowledge, she didn't ever talk about me either. I mean, that's just not something either one of us did. Not Abby. This is my first wife.
Yeah.
And then one day I was working doing dishes and she said, something like, why didn't you tell me you were married, or you never told me you were married, or whatever. I said, oh, well, I mean, yeah, I'm married. And I kind of thought people did know. That's another thing. I didn't make a big deal out of it, because I was pretty much the only person who worked there who was married, who was a college student, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was a little baffled as to why she was even asking this question. And I stayed baffled until I asked somebody about it later. And they said, well, she must've thought that you guys getting along was going somewhere.
Yeah. She must've been thinking you guys were flirting or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's
the thing. And I get you now. Cause again, I've met you now. It makes total logical sense. It also is not remotely how our society works. To the degree that when this came up, I had been working closely with Abby. And at the time, I think Trish and I weren't dating at the time, or so, I don't know. But it had come up. I kind of was a little interested in her. And I even said to you something about, like, I wish you told me. I'd been honestly thinking about maybe asking her out. And you said to me, you could do that. That's fine.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes. And again, it made logical sense. You guys were not an exclusive relationship. It's also an insane thing to tell your friend when your friend just found out that you're in a relationship with this person you're living with. You're like, oh, no, but it's fine if you want to ask. No, it's not. It's really not.
It wasn't?
No.
Oh. Well, I don't.
Not, I mean, and you also said, I don't think she'll say yes. And I now know Abby better, and she wouldn't have. I also know it would have been terrible and all sorts of things. But like, no, I'm not going to knock on the door and be like, hey, William, just here to take your live-in girlfriend out for a date. You know,
but see that.
By the way, we should get together next week for this thing we were gonna do.
That doesn't really describe the relationship we had. Live-in girlfriend, it wasn't.
No, quite. I would say it doesn't, because it was a much more emotional thing than that represents.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's
we get into the whole intimacy versus romance versus sexual issue as well. But I'd say. No, nobody had any business trying to get in between that relationship. And I didn't know it existed for the first couple years of our friendship. That's the thing. Now that I know you well enough, I absolutely understand your train of thought, and it all makes perfect sense unless you live in our world.
Okay.
You know how people work.
I mean, there did come a time where it was clear that, I mean, to both of us, that we, you know, we had a relationship that people would conventionally consider conventionally consider, a romantic relationship, or, you know, a couple or whatever.
Yeah.
That was, you know, we weren't seeing any other people. We weren't inclined to do that, you know. And then very shortly after that, it was very clear that, you know, we were heading toward a common law married kind of thing, which that's what we are. We're common law married. Yeah. So it's like, it's just a thing that just developed. I mean, we were friends for a long time before our respective divorces. And actually before the respective divorces, there was an acknowledgement that we got along better with each other than with our spouses. And the potential for something between us, you know, outside, you know, once we were out of our marriages, something between us to develop after that. I mean, all that was a thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'd made this mistake before. I was engaged to someone for like 3 years, and then we had a terrible breakup. And then within 8 months after that, I was married to someone else. That was a terrible idea. That was, I should not have done that. So at the end of our respective marriages, there was all that stuff going on. My thought at the time was, I don't know if this is real or if this is just, you know, a repeat of the thing that happened to me before. So, I mean, yeah, I have these feelings and I'm not going to pretend I don't. And I'm going to talk about them honestly, whatever, but I'm also not going to jump into some other thing.
That'd be crazy. Potentially tell the world, because then that just creates entanglements, make it all the worse if something happens.
Right. And now at the same time, I was already a godfather to the kids. I'd known them all since they were infants. And so, you know, I was still involved with their lives, and she was still one of my best friends and all that stuff.
Yes.
But I lived in an apartment and I stayed in that apartment. I didn't, you know, move out of there.
Yeah.
And we lived separate for a long time. And then when she got this house, you know, she thought she could use some, you know, help, and she was going to rent it out or whatever. It's like, yeah, rent it out to me. That's fine. And so that's how that all happened. And then, you know, just eventually I felt emotionally mature enough or emotionally stable enough that, you know, when certain feelings were there or still there or were there again, or however that works, I was like, we can do this, you know, we can commit to one another on this deeper level than, you know.
Then whatever. A few years later, you started telling people.
Right. Well, or it's not like it was.
No, but this is a thing though. Because the nature of an intimate relationship, at least in a very broad sense, is a defining characteristic of individuals, and is an important part of one's life. If one does not talk about it, at least sometimes casually, it can give the impression, often to the other person in the relationship, that it is not as important to them, because otherwise, why wouldn't they bring it up more in their life? Or that they are somehow wishing to hide it. And I'm not saying that's what happened here. What I am saying is, for a while, if you may recall, I constantly referred to her as your fake wife, meaning I considered you guys essentially married, but you weren't. And I realized later that was the wrong way to term that. But yeah, I call it for a long time. Until your, at the time, not wife, now wife, emailed me privately and said, could you not do that? William and I have a serious thing and we're really committed to each other. And it sounds less significant when you say that. This is the same one who you didn't intend call your wife in public until you found out that she actually really liked that idea. This is not me saying you do anything wrong. This is me giving you lessons of functional society. I'm saying this is the other version of your reasoning, how other people can perceive that.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, things just evolved the way they did. And
you know, as someone who married you, I feel like she also knows you. So,
well, yeah,
probably like, and that's the thing. Like at the time, it drove me crazy because I thought you were, history's greatest monster. Now that I know you well enough, I'm like, no, that makes perfect sense that that was how William reacted. And I assume, again, knowing you better than I do, she's like, that's how William is.
And then, well, but also we communicated, you know, we didn't just sit there not talking about anything.
Like No. You probably didn't have a lot of talk where you were like, I'm not really going to talk about this when I go see other people in the world. That's cool, right? Because why would you have that? That's a weird conversation to have.
Well, right. But I mean,
you'd have is it okay if I do talk about it? Which is a different conversation. That would have happened much later because you're perfectly comfortable not to talk about personal details.
Well, yes. And she didn't, I mean, that's another thing is like me not mentioning her name on the podcast. That was partly me because that's the way I am, but it was also her. I didn't know that she would be okay being on the 500th episode. Didn't know that. She could easily say, no, I'm not going to do that. That's putting myself out there too much or whatever. She's very careful about what she puts on Facebook. So she's a private person too.
No, which makes sense. But saying that, again, this is how people who aren't you could potentially perceive it. And it's a thing you have to watch out for. Because one thinks in one's head, you have to watch out for what you say. And you have to be responsible for what you say and how it impacts other people. This is one of those things where you also have to watch out for what you don't say.
Oh,
how that potentially impacts other people.
Right. I mean, that's what you just said. I've struggled with that my whole life.
You almost never get in trouble for shit you say. You get in trouble for shit you don't say.
Yeah, all the time. All the time.
I'm the exact opposite. I have discovered the least trouble I get in is when I say the least things.
Well, the thing is, part of what happens there, though, the reason I get in trouble is because, and what you're really talking about is that there are certain things that our culture assumes unless you say otherwise. And to the extent that you're the one at fault if you don't say otherwise. I mean, I can't say it as a defense. I mean, I can, but no one's going to accept it. I can't say, well, I never said that.
Yeah.
In fact, not only will they not take that as a defense, they'll think I'm being a sociopath and gaslighting
you, people. That you were hiding it.
Yeah, yeah. When that's not the case at all.
Yes, but the reasoning is you live in this culture. You have a certain social responsibility to be aware of conventions. And to a lot of people, it doesn't occur to them that you might not, because they are so embedded to them unconsciously, really. So it doesn't occur to anybody that you wouldn't be aware of the convention. Therefore, you not saying it means it was on purpose lying.
Yeah, right. That's right.
And it takes years for people to know you well enough to be like, no, he's just completely unaware of a lot of cultural conventions.
What usually helps people figure it out is when in total anger, they say, well, William, what if the tables were turned and I didn't say this? And, you know, it's like, well, what would you think? I'd say, I wouldn't even want to know that about you.
Right. Yes. That's the exact. Yes.
And usually at that moment, they realize how true that is, and they go, oh, okay, I get it now.
That's also enough times where you just legit shoot yourself in the foot, where it's like, why didn't you tell me? Oh, I didn't ever say. And I realized, like, he doesn't get anything out of not telling me that. Like, there's nothing useful in this. He really just made things awkward for himself. So,
well, except
Either he's got a compulsive lying issue or he just was genuinely unaware and didn't something that should be mentioned.
Well, when it comes to that whole thing about romantic relationships, though, because there are guys who don't want anyone to know they're committed to someone so they can run around and do bad things. But I think
there are also people who share way too intimate of details about those relationships.
Well, right. But what I'm saying is people are kind of on the lookout for guys like that who have a relationship, but they don't want to tell anybody. And that way they can cheat easier or they can whatever. But I think most people who've gotten to know me know that I don't
Well, and that's the thing, and not to put anything normative on it, but your way of behaving is so much less common than all those guys who keep it a secret for nefarious purposes. And so people assume that against you just because the numbers really aren't in your favor. And that doesn't mean you're wrong or that they should, but that's why.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Well,
just when this happens, it's just enormously more common that there's something seedy going on.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what this gal in college thought. You know, she thought that I was.
You were deliberate. Trying to play her so you could get a little on the side.
Well, and another thing is I didn't wear a wedding ring because I was a Seventh-day Adventist, and Seventh-day Adventists, at least back then, didn't wear wedding rings.
And that's a thing, because a lot of people don't wear wedding rings for a lot of very legitimate purposes. But movies and TV have taught if you're not wearing it, it's because you're looking to hook up with some strange.
Yeah, and I think that got me in trouble a lot, too. Yeah. It's like,
that's a huge thing. Movies and TV teaches a lot of bullshit right into that kind of stuff, too.
But yeah, you know, it was just, it was what it was. I mean, and I do have to admit that, I mean, now that things are the way they are, it is a lot simpler. I mean, obviously I don't run into any issues like I used to, and they would totally waylay me when they happened too. And and Abby thought it was hilarious. She thought it was so funny. It's like, I didn't think it was funny. I hated it.
Because part of the cultural assumption is a whole lot of shorthand happens that way. So if you're having a conversation and you don't want to say my wife, the logistics of the story you're telling have to bring up the fact that it's a person who lives with me and it's just the two of us and we've been together for years, like, and all of these details, and you have to explicate them. Whereas if you just say, so my wife, then you can move on with the story. And we've all assumed several things. You're living together, you're very committed, stuff like that. So That's part of the thing, how I start to realize, well, not how I, but how one who gets to know you starts to realize there's no nefarious intent, is you're just making life harder for yourself. Like, if this is your dastardly plan, you are the worst at it as anyone, because you are getting nothing out of this, like, extra communicative roadblocks.
But, you know, it's just, I mean, there are a lot of things that I grew up, you know, that's nobody's business now, but what makes it complicated though, where I come from, it's not complicated. What makes it complicated is like the internet and things like that, where you don't know who's going to hear what you're saying. So it's like in my brain, what my mind wants to do is to be the most, you know, cautious. Maybe, and I'm not saying that makes any sense or that's rational, that's the best thing to do.
Respectful.
Yeah, that's just what my brain does.
It's respectful to not say things about people without knowing whether or not they'd be okay with you saying those
things. Sure, but of course, I'm sure
I overdo it. You just take it to a molecular level.
Right, I'm sure I overdo it. I'm the first to admit that. But it's like at the time, I'm just do it. You know, I don't really reflect on it.
And that's the thing. I know this now about you, and it makes total sense, but it takes like 5 years of knowing you for it to click.
I know most people,
which
don't
is lucky
that.
So everybody who's been listening to the podcast knows now too.
Yeah, but most
they've
people,
been in this for almost a decade now.
Most people don't are long gone before it's like, that guy was a weirdo. I'm glad
the
I don't
thing
have
is
to
you're just it's not it, it's a it's the social version. Oh my God. I don't know that I could say it. I'm not going to say it this way, which is too bad because I think it's a useful illustration. You've heard the term neuroatypical.
Yes.
You are not that. But you are hardcore social atypical.
Yeah, I mean, at least.
And
yeah,
again, probably. there's no normative quality in that. It is not to say that you are worse or better. You are just socially atypical. Yeah. You just operate on a different level that is equally valid.
And, I don't know about that.
And on an individual basis, meaning when you're alone in your room, is just as functional.
Well, I mean, I don't have these
our problems. World.
Yeah, I don't have any of these problems back home, really. I mean, but I don't
But that's because they've all known you for a real long
time. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think if went to strangers in Meltzer, Dallas, it might be weird.
Yeah, maybe.
For a lot of reasons.
Maybe.
No, this is an interesting way to think about it. Okay, making the comparison to autism, and that might not be fair. Don't know. I freely admit autism is complicated. I'm not about having been learning about it recently. Really great way that people talk about it is I interact with the world differently than others. My brain operates in a different way, and it's not good or bad, but it means I need a set of tools to help me interact with all the people who are operating in this in the typical way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it this way, potentially you finding a set of tools to help you interact with people who view social interaction and obligation differently, which is everyone, this could be useful for you. Now, I have no idea what that would look like, and I have no idea why this has become me psychoanalyzing you.
I know what it looks like.
It's fun, so I'm going to do it.
I know what it looks like.
Hmm.
It looks like...
Podcast?
No. It looks like... first of all, asking people I'm with who I think know, like you or Abby, or like I'll send an email to Jazz. I'll say, can you explain this to me?
I lie to you a lot, though, just to see what happens. So I might
okay, not be a good but person. Another way it looks is I have conversations with Abby, you or Jazz, and like maybe a handful of other people in my head.
Oh.
You don't lie to me in my head.
Really? Are you sure it's me?
It sounds like you.
Yeah, that could be somebody else lying about being me. No, but I will say, you and I also do, I assume you do this with other people you're close to. We do postmortems on experiences you've had.
Yeah, that's right.
Some of them we do on the air, but some of them we do off the air as well.
But when I talk,
that makes sense.
When I talk to you in my head, it's in my head, so there's probably only so much the voice in my head can do. But there's insights there that I'm pretty sure you would say that I can only think of when I think of it in your voice.
And you've in all this time I've gotten to know you, you in theory have been getting to know me. So even if it's not necessarily something that's intuitive to you or even something you necessarily understand, you're probably pretty good at guessing how I would react in situations.
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah.
You can use that as a cautionary tale and just sidestep whatever that is.
Well, the Tony voice and the Jazz voice and the Abby and my mom, she's in there. All those, they're just.
Do we ever sing together?
They're just sitting at the table. I mean, you know, they're not driving the bus. They're just saying, you know, it's just my way of saying, well, what if Tony was here, what would he say?
You need bracelets.
Or if mom was here.
WWTD, WWJD, except that one will get confusing for people.
Or, you know, what if mom was here, what would she say? And I think I know all those people in my head well enough that I have a fairly good idea. And sometimes what they would say is helpful to me. So.
And I'm not going to say whether or not this is common because I don't know. I will say you and I share this. Because. Even though I feel like I have a better understanding of cultural assumptions and more in line with them.
Yeah.
I frequently am again, sort of postmortem dissecting social interactions I've had. I'll be like, I was with that person today. They seemed off. They seemed to not like, or like they didn't respond well to this. I wonder why. And I'll think about it. And sometimes I just make rules like don't talk about around that person anymore, but sometimes it's more like that wasn't good and I don't know why. Is it something like, what did I do? Could that have been a thing? And I try and change my behavior based on that.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a useful tool set regardless. So that's nice,
right?
Because I have a lot of things with my friends where I don't think I'm good friends to them, and it used to be just guilt. I'd feel bad. I'll add it with the podcast. Afterward, I'd be like, oh, I was just really mean to William, blah, blah, blah. And nowadays, it's more like, that didn't go like it goes when it's good for us. What happened? and I'll look at me and be like, oh, yeah, I did that. And William doesn't respond well to that, or that's pushy, or that's, you know, shouldn't have worded it that way, or something like that. And I don't feel the need to be like, I am so sorry for how I was last episode. I just am like, remember that. You did it. I did not do it next time. I get it a lot with my gaming group. There's a lot of stuff where I'm like, this session we weren't yelling. Was it how I was approaching things and right. stuff like that? And you know, you come yeah. up with answers. I believe that, you know, introspection is very important.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And it's a very useful tool. Wow. Yep. I feel like with this extra long episode, we sort of ended it. It just sort of tapered off there. Like, we ended on the bombshell that, you know, self-knowledge can be valuable.
Well, it's always good to be reminded of things, even
yeah,
if
yeah, yeah.
they're, you know, basic things. Sometimes those are the very things that we forget or need reinforced.
Later on, I will think very carefully about what I could have done to make this ending better.
Okay.
And I'll adjust for next time. You know, I'm just growing progress all the time. Yep, also, progress. Because I don't know of a better one, we're going to call this adult onset barbecue donut. We're just not ever going to explain it. So,
okay.
This episode is called Adult Onset Barbecue Donut.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.